Golf Today on a Tuesday. Damon Hack alongside George Savarikas. Welcome to our new set. Conversational, comfortable, cozy. I'm not sure I'd call golf's longest day comfortable and cozy as it stretches into a second day.
I figured they just wanted us to have a nice seat after working golf's longest day yesterday, which was a beast for everyone who played in it.
Yeah.
The people who caddied in it, for the USGA who put on these 10 final qualifying sites around the country and in Canada, for our production crew who put in the long hours. But it's such a special day, and it's so rare in the sport that you have 1/4 of the field, basically, or a little more, in a major championship, all decided through open qualifying on one day. And we had some spillover because we do have 5 spots in the U.S. Open that were on the line today as well.
Labor of love for the players, for the caddies, officials, for the broadcasters as well. Let's get you caught up because we're just a little more than a week away from the season's 3rd major in the men's game, the U.S. Open Championship. We'll head to Oakmont Country Club just outside of Pittsburgh in the Steel City for a record 10th time and coverage all next week, beginning with Live From on Monday. So yesterday, final qualifying took place at 10 sites across the country and Canada, with spots in the national championship on the line. Now, as George said, 2 sites did not finish. Playoff in Valencia, California, and also weather delay in West Palm Beach, Florida, forced play into Tuesday. To the highlights we go. Valencia, Joey Herrera versus Lucas Carper. Second playoff hole, Carper on the par 4, 10th for bogey to continue the playoff.
Woo. Living right.
Exhale. You see that?
Big time. So we had 1 playoff hole yesterday. That was the 2nd. Now we go to playoff hole number 3, the par 5, 18th again. You got some diehards out there following the action in the fairway, watching behind. Herrera's 3rd, peppering the pin. What a shot.
Wow. Sticks it close. Now Carper, however, spot of bother. This is 4th from the bunker. Really needs to make this.
How good was that? Barely lands it on the green. Rolls out. Oh, birds the edge.
Wow. Tap that in for par. So Herrera going to be left with a birdie to make it to get into the U.S. Open. Cashes it in. He's going to Oakmont. Able to exhale a little bit, celebrate. This 27-year-old from Fillmore, about 20 miles from Valencia, California. They call the girlfriend. Enjoy the moment with his family. He's on his way to Oakmont.
Joey, they coined the final qualifiers for the U.S. Open golf's longest day, but for you, it turned into the longest day and the longest night. How did you sleep last night?
Not very well, for being honest. A lot of excitement, a lot of, you know, I just kind of wanted it to start, but I mean, for it to end that way, it was all worth it, for sure.
A 7 a.m. tee time for this playoff. You were out here on the range well before even 6 a.m. Did you have time to eat breakfast this morning?
Yeah. I had some cereal at home. Luckily, I can stay at home, so I definitely did. So it was a nice morning, and kind of was able to get into my routine and do what I needed to do. So,
talk about this shot here on 18. You put an absolute dart near the pin. What was going through your mind as you were prepping for that shot?
Yeah, I did. Had 95 yards, just a perfect number to kind of rip it a 60 degree, and I knew it couldn't go long, so had a good number and just took dead aim and swung it.
Just saw you on the phone over there. Who were you on the phone with, and what were you guys discussing?
I was with my girlfriend, calling her, and she sacrificed a lot for me to be able to pursue this, so yeah, it was a nice phone call to have.
Is she going to be with you at Oakmont?
Oh, for sure. She's going to have to call out of work, but...
It'll be well worth it. Your dad works here in the pro shop, a lot of family ties. What does it mean to have such a large gallery here so early in the morning?
I mean, it's amazing. I mean, half these people probably got up at 5:30 in the morning just to come watch me play golf. So really cool, and their support was unbelievable yesterday and today.
Joe, congratulations. Good luck at Oakmont.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good luck.
What a moment for Joey. His dad, Bill, was on the bag. His dad played college golf at USC. Joey's sister, the tournament director of the JM Eagle Championship on the LPGA out in Los Angeles. So he joins Preston Summerhays, Riley Lewis, and Zachary Polo on their way to Oakmont.
Fitting that we had a playoff in Palm Beach and some cachet in this playoff. Luke Poulter, son of Ian Poulter, needs to make birdie to make sure there wasn't a playoff, so may or may not have given away what would ultimately happen here as Poulter had 6 feet to sew things up and get his first start in a major.
Oh no, hand over mouth and knee bend. So they're going to a 2-for-1 playoff. First hole, Austin Truslow, par 4, 10th for birdie to advance.
Here's where things get crazy. Poulter down for par.
Oh gosh.
Rips it through, and then Truslow, par putt of his own. This to advance, but 2.5 feet.
You know, sometimes you drag on the good, and sometimes you drag off of poor play. Two missed opportunities, so they continue.
Bogey, bogey there, second playoff hole, and then this happens, David.
Sometimes you need to get a little farther away from the cup. Down it goes for Truslow. Hat off for Poulter. And Truslow going to the U.S. Open.
We had 4 spots up for grabs. Philip Barbary Jr., 11 under par. Justin Hicks, the 50-year-old, great story. He gets through as well. Frankie Harris, who's top 50 in the World Amateur Golf Rankings, just wrapped up his season with South Carolina. And then Austin Truslow, who was able to clinch that last spot in that playoff victory over Ian Poulter, whose first alternate, Blades Brown, had that rip-roaring start with a 65, second round 70. He is the second alternate. About Austin Truslow, who played the 2020 season on the Corn Ferry Tour. This from the Hurricane Junior Golf Tour. Grew up in the state of Florida. He's been chipping one-handed since his junior golf days. He's known for his one-handed action. That one-handed action has made the U.S. Open for the second time in the past couple years. Also qualified for the 2023 U.S. Open at LACC. Pretty unique game to watch for at Oakmont. And speaking of the Palm Beaches, let's flash back to earlier this year, Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches, Florida State. Then junior Luke Clanton earned his PGA Tour card with a made cut. Clanton was able to earn his card through points accrued in the PGA Tour University Accelerated Rankings. This week he makes his PGA Tour debut at the RBC Canadian Open. The bio for Clanton. Making his pro debut, earned those 20 points through PGA Tour U, had 4 top 10s and 13 PGA Tour starts, including 2 runner-up finishes, was a second team All-American, won the McCormick Medal, as well as the Ben Hogan Award winner. And not since Jack in 61 had an amateur had 3 top 10s on the PGA Tour in the same season. That was until Clanton a year ago. And now we're joined by the man who can start earning paychecks on the PGA Tour. Luke, good to have you on Golf Today. You had this amazing summer of 2024. So how do you set expectations for yourself now as you start your journey as a pro?
Yeah, the expectations are always going to be pretty high for sure. But, you know, again, I think I have a great team behind me with the process that we have. And again, you know, it's the first start as a pro. So, you know, of course, it's a little bit nerve-wracking. But again, it's you know, we're going to go out and just try to play the best we can. I know it's a generic answer and everyone says it. But again, I think it's just the truth. I think, you know, we've handled ourselves really well through my amateur career. And we're going to try to do the same as a pro.
Luke, I was with you at the Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches. I want to start with the look. Where are the long locks? You got your ears lowered, as my dad used to say. You got a nice haircut.
Yeah, no, I shaved off the hair and shaved the mustache. I think it was about time for to kind of grow up a little bit, for sure. But, you know, again, I kind of wanted to look a little bit more professional this time.
What have the last few months been like since you got that card? You had your family with you. You had the nice prayer circle on that Friday before you teed off in pursuit of that PGA Tour card. What have the last few months been like, just to, you know, looking forward to a moment like this week?
I mean, it's an unbelievable moment. You know, we've been waiting for this moment for a couple months now. But again, I was so focused with the team in college golf and trying to win national championships and trying to play the best I can. It was definitely hard. So, but again, you know, I'm excited to kind of get my pro debut going and see how it goes. But it's just amazing to be here.
Luke, you were exempt into the U.S. Open as an amateur based on what you were able to accomplish. Had to give up that exemption and go through final qualifying. You came up short. Why was it important for you to start your pro journey the week before the U.S. Open versus the week after?
You know, it was tough to not make it through. But, again, it's just I'm excited to be here. You know, it's a dream come true to be out here in general, to play on the PGA Tour, and now to be in Canada for the first time ever. It's pretty cool. I've tried the cuisines a couple of times, and it's definitely different, but, you know, I'm just excited to be here.
Luke, you've earned so much respect with your play, with your clubs. What do you think your biggest challenge is going to be as a professional?
Probably eating better, I'd probably say. I think I struggle with that a little bit. But, you know, again, I think me, my caddy, and my agent are going to try to work on that a little bit better. I think we had Tim Hortons the last three nights in a row, so it's been a little bit brutal, but we're working on it.
I mean, I get it. Your first trip to Canada, you got to stop by Timmy Hortons and indulge a little bit.
Good.
You've had this bubble of living in Tallahassee, which I wouldn't want to leave Tallahassee based on the college experience you've been able to have at Florida State. It's always fascinating when guys first turn pro. Like Victor Hovland turned pro as an undergrad and then stayed in Stillwater a couple years because he wanted to practice with his buddies, his teammates, and make the pro adjustment a little easier. Other guys turn pro and they'll head right to Jupiter or Jacksonville or, say, Scottsdale. What's your plan going to be in the coming year or two?
You know, we're trying to figure that out as well, actually. It's this last year has been a little bit crazy, for sure. But to kind of have the car locked up now, it's nice to kind of actually take a little bit of a breather and play some golf. You know, everyone's been talking about the first event for a while, and now it's kind of nice to be here and be ready. But, you know, again, I think we're going to figure that out over the next couple of months. I'm going to be in Tallahassee till the end of the summer for sure. But, you know, again, I'm just so freaking excited to go out there and play some golf, man.
Luke, for those who don't know your backstory, your mom, longtime flight attendant, your dad, landscape and glass company. You were a kid who was hitting chip shots and pitches sometimes in the artificial greens on a Muni outside of Miami. How much do you draw a direct line for those late nights, you know, chipping under the lights, the groundskeepers wanting to send you home to where you are standing today?
Yeah, I mean, you just kind of said it there. I mean, it's incredible. I think my dad, my mom, they never will ever get enough credit for what they did for me and my journey in my life. But, you know, I always think about it because it's what my dad set for me as goals. You know, it's ever since a kid, he's always going to tell me I was going to be the best in the world. And, you know, he kept saying that to me every single day. And, you know, he made me believe it. So it's without that belief and without that trust in the process of what we were doing and, you know, 11 o'clock at night at the flashlight hitting on a plastic greens, it's definitely tough, but we did it. So I think it kind of just shows if you have a dream and you have a goal, you can get there.
Luke, I had mentioned right before we started the interview, you're the first amateur since Jack Nicklaus in 61 that had three top tens on the PGA Tour in the same season. And I remember being at the Rocket Mortgage Classic last year, we were talking about, okay, we got this amateur, he's got some game, let's see how he does this week. You get a top 10 finish. You didn't look back after that, and that was building on what you'd done the previous week, making the cut at the U.S. Open. Have you had some time now to reflect on what you were able to accomplish that summer to set you up now for this next chapter?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's... I think over the last couple of months, I've kind of looked back at it a little bit more, and it was amazing. It was just kind of really quick. It just happened really fast, and, you know, it was amazing. But, again, I think it's just going to try to stay in that process as much as I can. It's you know, out here, you can play some good golf and not score great. So, you know, the thing is with me is I'm going to just try to keep staying in my process and trust in the Lord. That's it.
You know, in college, you can go through a bit of a hazing process. The older guys, the juniors and seniors might tease you, give you a noogie from time to time. What's been the treatment on the range? Are guys welcoming to you? Are they giving you the evil eye? What's been the reception so far as a young professional?
No, they've been amazing. All these guys are super, super cool. I mean, it's incredible to see the guys. You know, you watch on TV every single day, and they come up to you and say, hey, Luke, it's a little bit startling at first, but then you get used to it after a while. But it's been incredible. You know, I remember the first kind of couple starts, I was so scared to even talk to any of the guys because that was basically my role models. But now it's like, you know, they come up to me and say, hi, do you want to go play some nine holes? And it's just cool. You know, they've been so welcoming for, you know, the last 8-9 months, and it's been incredible. So I'm just excited to kind of be out here with them and compete.
Luke, we have a new venue this week at TPC Toronto. Not sure how much time you've been able to either spend on the course or what have you heard about the layout?
I literally showed up about an hour ago and putted for about 45 minutes before I came here, but it looks unbelievable out here. it's very windy and very open with a lot of fescue, so it's going to be challenging no matter what. But, you know, we're just excited to kind of get it going. It's new for everybody out here, so we're ready to kind of roll, and we're going to play nine later and see how it looks.
I was talking to friends in Toronto. They said you can breathe in the fresh air in Caledon because you're about 45 minutes to an hour outside the city. Luke, play well this week. We'll certainly be watching.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
We say hello to Golf Week senior writer Beth Ann Nichols. Beth Ann, what impressed you the most about Maya Stark holding off the field, in particular the world number one, in the way that she did?
I think it was the way she came into the week, you know, not riding a lot of confidence, thinking more about her place in the overall year in terms of status and not thinking about winning at all, and how she proved to herself that you can focus more on your process and less on how you're feeling and your emotions, and try not to control everything. And I think a lot of times when players start talking about their process, I kind of tune out a little bit. But she was really interesting in terms of getting down to the nitty-gritty of what that looked like, and that just hovering her club, you know, before she hit it, she found that it above the ground released some of the tension. She talked about how her coach said that she got too curious sometimes on par putts and would look at the hole too quickly because she's left eye dominant, and to really think about keeping her head aligned and just looking at the ball longer. Small things that I think we all could actually put into play ourselves. And so, you know, I was thinking back to something that Lydia Ko said at the start of the week about how it seems like a lot of people have won this championship, but when you really get down to it, it's a small club. And she just beat Maya, becomes the 56th player to win this, only the 6th European to win the U.S. Women's Open. And I want to note that she was staying at the Best Western last week, and she got up on Monday and did her CNN, BBC, Swedish media hits, and then moved on to the next LPGA stop, flying to Philly for this week's event in Atlantic City. So I think sometimes the glamorous life of the LPGA isn't quite what it seems. But I'm going to guess she might be the first person to stay at the Best Western and earn $2.4 million during her stay.
Hey, it worked. So yeah. Enjoy. And things could have been a lot more interesting on that 72nd hole if Nelly Korda had been able to make birdie from the fairway. Korda, the world number one, was right in the heat of contention. Her best finish in the U.S. Women's Open, ultimately as a runner-up. How encouraged should we be by her recent play?
Well, you know, obviously ball striking wise, it was a clinic. She was top in strokes gain off the tee. She was number one. You know, she was top 10 in every category except for putting. Putting was the only thing that seemingly let her down. She was outside the top 50 in strokes gain putting. She mentioned in her post-round presser that she didn't get in a bunker all week, which is kind of mind-blowing considering there are 138 bunkers at Erin Hills. But I actually found that she came into that Sunday conversation with the press and a lot lighter than I thought she would. You know, obviously she talked about, you know, the heartbreak that she's experienced at the U.S. Women's Open, but this was by far her best chance. And so after listening to her, you know, I came away thinking, you know, I think this is a positive step for her. She can walk away and frame it as such that, you know, this is the first time I've ever been in contention at this championship, which clearly tests players in a vastly different way than any other week of the year. And if she could have just gotten a few more putts to fall, it would have been hers. So I think she leaves feeling positive going into Riviera next year.
Beth Ann, another player who was oh so close, Julia Lopez Ramirez, this young star, ended up in the final pairing on Sunday. And you had your eye on her, just how far she hits the golf ball. What more can you tell us about her?
Well, I really think she spent a lot of time out in the shadows, really, of Ingrid Lindblad and Rose Zhang in her amateur career, even though she's a two-time SEC champion and spent a brief time ranked as number one in the world in Wagger. But goodness gracious, she averaged 293 yards off the tee for the week, 16 yards farther than the next person on that list. Nelly Korda, by the way, ranked third, but just so much power. But I think her smile is another thing that we kind of took away, that she just seemed at ease throughout the week and like she really enjoyed the spotlight. And I will say that, you know, that time in the scoring tent, obviously before she actually finished her round on 18, plummeted her down the leaderboard. But I think we leave this championship thinking that no one would be a bit surprised to see Julia step into the winner's circle this season.
Haley Cooper is a name many golf fans may not know yet, but she had a life-changing week in Wisconsin, certainly with a big payday, Beth Ann.
Absolutely. I think Haley Cooper embodies everything that the U.S. Women's Open is, and that's an opportunity for anyone. And, you know, Haley wasn't even sure if she wanted to turn professional, worked away on the Epson Tour through the Women's All-Pro Tour, which is, you know, a developmental tour that I'm sure a lot of golf fans have never even heard of. And she's actually played really well on the Epson Tour this season, but has only amassed $50,000 for the year, which when you take out the expenses of travel and taxes, and $50,000 doesn't really go a long way. And so for her to finish in the top 10, earn over $350,000 for her efforts, you know, and obviously play her way into Riviera next year as well, it just relieves a lot of the tension financially for her. She only had one sponsor for the season. So she can play freely as she tries to get her LPGA card for next year.
Now the talent runs deep on the LPGA. Beth Ann, great to see you back home. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Flashback a year ago, the 2024 Arnold Palmer Cup at La Hinch. United States team defeated the international side by a 5-point margin in Ireland. The U.S. currently leads the all-time series in the Palmer Cup, 15-12 with one tie. And it was back in 1997, Arnold Palmer was first approached by the Golf Coaches Association of America regarding lending his name to a college event between the United States and the international team. Here's what we have on tap for the 29th playing of the Arnold Palmer Cup, June 5th through 7th at Congaree in Ridgeland, South Carolina. Each team consists of 12 men and 12 women.
George Congaree's previously hosted PGA Tour events in 2021, the Palmetto Championship, and again in 2022 with the CJ Cup in South Carolina. Let's welcome in Bruce Davidson. He, of course, the director of golf, Congaree. Great to visit with you, Bruce. We appreciate it. So what's the biggest difference between preparing for a bunch of great kids, some of the best in the world, versus hosting a PGA Tour event?
I don't think there's much difference, Damon. These kids are the best in the world. They're the best amateur players. But if you look at the pedigree of players who have played in the Palmer Cup, it's unbelievable. I think 245 past participants have gone on to play on various tours, with 145 going on to represent their countries and President's Cups and Solheim Cups and everything else. I mean, it's really incredible. 145 victories, I think, it was on tour. So you're seeing the stars of tomorrow today, and they're stars already.
Bruce, you guys played host to the Palmetto Championship in 2021 on the PGA Tour, then that limited field CJ Cup in 2022, won by Rory McIlroy. Why was it important for Congaree to now host a high-level amateur event?
I think if you look at the synergies already exist between the Arnold and Winnie Palmer Foundation and the Congaree Foundation, we have an agreement, if you like, with the Palmer Foundation. They actually give two of our Congaree Global Initiative kids a scholarship this year. Every year they give one of our kids a scholarship. And we had this relationship, and then we were at dinner one night and Amy Saunders leaned over the table and said, "Do you think you guys would be interested in hosting the Palmer Cup?" And I said, "I really think Mr. Friedkin would like to do that." And he did. We have set our stall out, if you like, as still the only truly philanthropic golf club in the world. And our mission is through the game of golf to make the world a better place for those well-deserving, underprivileged children. And it just seemed to be a perfect fit for the Palmer Cup. And personally, I'm excited because I think the future of the game probably is to have the men and women playing together. The inclusiveness of it all, if that's the right word, to see the girls play and the boys play at the same time, I just think it's fantastic.
Bruce, Congaree's always looked out for the rest of the surrounding community through the Congaree Global Golf Initiative, helping underserved high school kids that want to be involved in the game of golf and different levels of the game. Why was that so important for the club to establish back in 2017? And what does the future look like through the initiative?
Well, it goes back further than that, Damon. Mr. Friedkin and I had talked about this, 15 years ago, and he wanted to do a philanthropic club. And CGGI was really born of the fact that myself and John McNeely, who was my partner here with Dan and Bob McNair, John and I were both educated because we were decent at sport. I mean, that's the only reason we went to university. John actually played basketball at NC State on the same team as David Thompson, Final Four. Had 50-something scholarship offers. I got one and took it at the University of St. Thomas in Houston many years ago. But that allowed us to compete and be educated. We got degrees. So CGGI was really, it's really an academic program. We have about 290 kids now gone through the program, and 97% of them have gone on to university and almost 100% graduate. So that was very important, the Congaree Global Golf Initiative. But Dan, you know, Dan is a visionary. He just wanted to have a club that we knew that golf, we could congregate 200 or 300 guys together who would form a network to support these kids. So at the end of their collegiate careers, our ambassadors are giving them internships and jobs. I mean, it's just, we haven't deviated one iota from his vision. And it's worked out perfectly so far. And he's going to make it bigger and better. He told me last time I saw him that he has some ideas for CGGI to go more global. And I can't wait to hear what those ideas are.
That's amazing to hear. Bruce, I've been to Congaree when you guys get the fairways cranked up to what feels like a 12 on the stem meter. So curious how fast the course is going to play this week for the Palmer Cup.
Well, little known fun fact, George Savarikas made probably the first hole-in-one at number 10 at Congaree.
Oh, wow. This?
It's true. It's true.
It was a 7-iron from 195, wasn't it, George?
Story, it's like a fish story. It gets better over time.
Yeah, That's what we told everybody.
Yeah.
I went out today with Mary B. from the USGA. Went out. We're just checking that the tees were fair for both male and female. And I would say it's June, guys, so there's a little bit more coverage. We've got rain tomorrow, I think, which is unfortunate. But today I think the fairways were stimping about 9, and the greens will definitely be north of 13. Depends on the rain that we get. But notwithstanding that, we built this golf course on the most amazing piece of land. We have an expression back in Scotland that God makes the best golf courses, and only thing an architect can do is mess it up. And Tom Fazio took this wonderful piece of land, and John McNeely had a lot to do with it too. And they just created this fantastic ball-on-the-ground Australian-type golf course. And so you can get 30 to 40 yards of roll on a drive, but the ground game comes into it. So there's a way to play the ball on the ground and get round here. I mean, I always think that Corey Pavin would have been a superstar around here, or Bernard Langer. You know, you don't have to hit it that far if you're smart. So I'm very, very excited to watch them. And I was at Lahinch last year, and I marveled at how good the girls were. I mean, I've taught a couple boys that did play on the Palmer Cup team, so I know how good they were. But I was just a marvel how good. I can't wait to see them play around here.
Well, it sounds like Eamon Lynch is on his way to Congaree. George Savarikas is made some history at Congaree. I got to make my way 30 miles away from Savannah and come visit you, Bruce. Thanks so much for joining us. I know you got a busy week, and enjoy the Arnold Palmer Cup.
Guys, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Good to see you, Bruce.
You too.